Hello and welcome to the Crafty Coders Podcast 5, Cinco. What is French for 5?
Is it not Cinco?
No, it's Spanish.
Quickly figured out last.
That's still Spanish.
That is why I did not pass French.
I think we figured out last time none of us know French.
Okay. Dude, it took 2 years.
We've had a month to look this up, though. We probably should have.
It is the fifth Crafty Coders Podcast. If only there was something like Google. If anybody speaks French... go ahead and send us what at least like 1 through 10 in French to podcast@craftygoders.com so we can know what it is.
Yeah, because we're not going to need 11 till next year.
Exactly. My name is Eric Moore. I'm here with Chris Albrecht and Matt Chandler. And our guest today, actually in studio, Michael Green.
Hi, guys.
I'm right here.
I'm over here, guys.
No, really, I'm right here.
He's actually
this here. Is uncomfortable, guys.
Okay, I'm feeling a little weird.
He's actually here today.
That is
Michael's
amazing.
Michael's actually here. He showed up.
Thank you for being here, Michael.
Against his will. Michael.
Michael.
I had to drag him here in my truck, but...
It was really uncomfortable, but...
Behind the truck, he had drug him.
Yeah.
It's amazing that we can force him talking in the microphone.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, this is the microphone?
So Michael is also a crafty coder.
Yes, works with all of us.
Crafty coder?
It's code that's crafty.
Yeah.
The website says so. That's right. And then, of course, again, if you guys have any comments, if anybody out there wants to ask us a question about anything that we've talked about or give us topic ideas, the email address is?
podcast@craftycoders.com. Yeah.
So send us something. That would be cool.
Anything.
Complaints. Yes.
Seriously, send us something. Tell us we suck. I don't care.
Draw a picture. Yeah. We like pictures.
Send us a picture. Yeah, you know, it's the digital age. You know, send us a picture of your code. That would be great.
I thought you were going to say something else.
Whoa. Code, C-O-D-E.
What is that code for?
Sorry, that's the other podcast after you guys leave. Forgot you guys were still here. So today, the first thing we're going to kick off, agile development. What does anybody think of it? I mean, you guys are going to have to take agile development and run with it.
All right, who wants to give a description of it?
Who's going
to
define?
I think Chris should.
All right. Here's how I understand agile development. It's supposed to be a place.
Dude, you got really close to your mic.
I think my mic got close to me.
No, move it.
I've always considered us pretty close.
There you go. All right, that's much better.
Dude, I didn't move. I slid down.
That's the problem.
It's my magnetism. Agile development. From what I understand and from the experiences I've had with it, is a process to get the developers actual user involved, kind of a management overseeing what you're doing. And that way you get everybody involved and you get a concrete deliverable that you're going to release in a specified amount of time, you know, maybe a week, 2 weeks, and you continue working on a larger project in smaller pieces. Wow, could I have any more peas without this filter? This is ridiculous. But you're going to...
We're going to make some noise here.
Nice.
There you go.
Am I better now?
That will be better.
I can't hear myself through the headphones, but I still sound thumbs up.
Sure.
All right. But you go through and you divide a project into small pieces. You work on it completely, get it deliverable, so when you're done working after a week, 2 weeks, you've got some code that could be releasable. The project manager or the actual users involved the whole
product
way.
Product manager.
Yeah, and product manager. Involved the whole way, so that you say, this is what I'm going to develop. They agree, they sign off, and you don't change it while you're coding it.
And what we've actually done, which really what we'll probably talk about in this podcast, is Scrum, which is an agile development process.
It's a lot harder to say it out and define it.
It's different, but it's like a subset of it where you have a product backlog and then you create out of that backlog sprints, which are, it can be anything from 2 weeks to a month to 30
anything
days.
From a design thing.
So,
to, yeah.
But the object is to every 2 weeks after a sprint to have a deliverable product, a workable product.
Fully tested.
Fully tested, ready to go. Whether it's a fully implemented part of the product or whether it is just a small part of the product, but it's done. So that's kind of what we want to talk about tonight is what, from our experience, what are the pros and cons? What do we think about it?
I'm going to start off by saying what's funny is as developers, we're to, I don't know if implement's the right word, but it's the process that we're supposed to follow. Yet none of us as developers have went to any type of Scrum training or Agile training. Yeah. You know, that's what all the managers go to, and they buy into this idea, and they come back and they say, okay, we're going to do Scrum, we're going to do Agile because it's going to help us deliver something quicker, a complete product at the end.
Yeah.
But, you know, we don't get to buy into it. And that's a way with a lot of things in, you know, in any job is that you just get told what you're going to do. But it's a methodology that the developer doesn't necessarily have to buy into. They just have to follow participate in.
And now all the three of us, minus Eric, have had experience.
Lucky Eric.
Minus zero?
For the four of us minus Eric, so three of us. I really am a programmer, guys.
it's usually just one or zero. Yeah. I don't
really know. You're zero-based, right?
Yeah. Exactly. We've all worked on a project where we've done Scrum. Or
like really, Matt and I, we're in the middle of a sprint right now.
Yeah. But we've really, what we really do is almost kind of a, I don't know what you call it, in software terms, it would be like a fork of Scrum. You know, we've taken Scrum and we've said, well, we're going to modify it to do it this way. And that's kind of what we've done. Where some of our projects, we don't really do a true full product backlog that the product manager is supposed to do the product backlog.
Right.
And we've never really done that because I don't know.
Part of it's getting the product user buy-in. Yeah. I mean, it's still new to us. So when we tell a user that, hey, you're going to pick the five things we're going to code, they're not used to that. They're used to being told, we tell them, here's what we're going to do for you.
And in a corporate environment, like what we're doing, I think it's a little harder to get because everyone's got their own stuff to do, you know. Whereas if you're a software development company and you're creating software to sell to customers, the customers are your users. They're telling you what they want.
Right.
What they want in the sprint and stuff like that. So it's been real hard for us to really get a full Scrum process going.
I think of it the same way I do unit testing. I think some of these ideas are really brilliant for a product like, you know, Microsoft Word, some huge monolith of a product that you keep chipping away little things at, where we get a lot of products that, you know, a sprint may actually be, that may be the product, you know? I mean, we have small projects that it takes 2 weeks to develop, and so it's very odd to go and add a third week of, well, here's how long I think it's going to take me. And I guess we get a little more complete product or at least a more user buy-in so that when we are finished, it's closer to what the user would want. But
what we've used it for is almost more of a time tracking system than anything.
Well, that's what our managers use it for.
I think that's what the problem is.
Yes.
We use it as a burn down chart.
Yeah.
So somebody can see where we're at.
We don't do a full Scrum. So we take, like we do with a lot of other things, and I'm guilty of this as anyone else, is we try to take something and fit it into where it really shouldn't be.
Right.
You know, that goes for, you know, patterns or creating a certain type of, you know, layout and software, you know, where you try to do like a one size fits all type thing. It just doesn't work.
No.
Some projects just aren't good for Scrum.
Well, and like I said, I think a lot of the buy-in for Scrum is we get stuff like we did today. where, all right, we need to follow this process. We need to get a deliverable. That's what we get from, you know, our boss. And what they really want to see is the burn down chart. And they really don't care. They just want to see where we're at. You know, they've promised somebody a deadline.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And they want to know where we're at. And so Scrum's like, oh, I could just come by and look and see how much they have left to this deliverable product, which is probably an age old product, you know, or an age old problem of where are my employees, what are they working on, and how long till they're done.
Yeah.
But in the software development, it's such a funny deal, or at least in our area, because we're constantly revising how we do projects or how we develop the source code. And so Scrum is a very awkward fit in some time when we're trying to learn some new technology or develop something different, and then at the same time try to also do it in 2 weeks. So they're like, well, how long will this take you? You know, this is my first MVC app. I don't know, but I guess 2 weeks. You know, I mean, that's just the stock answer.
I agree with you totally.
And why is it called Scrum?
It's probably an acronym of something.
Actually, I just read that it's not an acronym. That's what made me think of that. I was like,
isn't that
so?
What?
Why?
Because it was scum, and they were like, no. Let's just add an R. They'll catch on.
Isn't a scrum like the huddle and like rugby? Isn't that what a scrum is?
Wow,
you just choked Chris up.
I get it now. it is.
It's a huddle.
Oh,
I didn't. So. You guys are all huddling together and coming up with a plan.
Well, there we go.
That would be my guess.
We all need to take up rugby.
You guys learn something new.
No, but Michael and I worked on a project a year ago or 2 years ago, or I can't even remember. But it was kind of the first time we tried Scrum. And I think we had nobody knows what's going on right now. We're just like laughing.
You guys had something.
Yeah.
I've got something.
But, you know, we didn't know the full process, and
we need a podcast product user.
I completely lost where I was now.
And Michael on a project years ago.
Years ago, like 10 years ago, we were working on this project.
So you were like 13?
I was 14.
Did you guys invent Scrum?
I had hair, yeah.
But what happened in this was it was a project from scratch, but we started with 2 week iterations, and we didn't really know. We were just like, all right, we did the whole estimate hours things, and we said, this is how long it's going to take us. And what ended up happening with this, which could have been part our fault, but I like to blame it on Scrum because it's
right.
But
it's never our fault.
Is that we got spaghetti code. We got like duct tape code.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is not easily maintainable because we tried to push out this so fast. But that part of that was our problem. But we were told, you know, hey, we need to get this out. In 2 weeks, we need to have a releasable version. Then 2 weeks after that, we release another iteration of it. And what ended up coming out with it was just nasty code that was thrown together that technically, you know, people would say, hey, it works.
It does work.
But every time they come back and say, we want to add this, it's like, oh, God.
That'll be 2 weeks.
Yeah. Like, what happens is, each thing in the backlog starts to take longer and longer because it's so hard to add features because it's just not designed right. So.
We were Matt and I were in a meeting today, and a perfect example was in the middle of this last sprint. My product user came up and said, "Hey, we should do it this way instead of the way we agreed upon." And so we were told, well, yeah, that may have been right, but we should have said no, and let's just get a agreed upon product out there. And that's what I think the problem with Scrum is, or this agile development, is you get something out there fast, but you sacrifice some design or supportability for having something out there by a deadline. And, you know, part of that is a deadline that I think in your case, with the product you and Michael worked on, is kind of self-imposed. Now, we actually have on this last latest project, we've got a deadline that's actually kind of imposed by the business processes of, you know, we have to have it by this date because that's when they need it.
Yes, which is fine.
And that even, you know, maybe Agile fits into there. We've got to get a product out by that time. But when you're done, do you get a product that is actually supportable once you're done? Or how much more time are you going to have to spend, you know, fixing bugs, finding different ways to add enhancements that just don't fit into the original thought process?
Yeah.
So, yeah, going back to the project Chandler and I worked on, I mean, you said it was like spaghetti code. And, you know, I believe a lot of it was due to we were pressed on time.
A lot of it was due to?
Doo-doo.
It is doo-doo.
It is doo-doo. Going back to it, I mean, that was in our backlog. Clean doo-doo. No, but it was a lot of it. You're pressed on time. I mean, no matter how much you try to convince yourself, okay, I need to make this nice, clean, readable code. But you're still pressed on time. That's constantly humming over you. So after this project, I worked on another one with another fellow I work with, Brad, who was on podcast episode
4.
Yeah. Almost the same thing ended up happening. I mean, you want to try to give the manager a predictable set of hours on how long something's going to take. But back to what Chris was saying, I mean, you really can't honestly say, well, this part of the code or this logic's going to take exactly 2 hours.
Yeah.
You know, but then when he sees that bar graph slightly going off your trend or whatever,
yeah,
he starts to panic. He starts pressuring you, and then okay, well, we got to meet to the deadline.
I'll
and
cut
we
out
got,
this, or I'll hard code this. Right. I mean, that just ends up what it's being. You sacrifice design or flexibility,
yeah,
you know, for speed. Which is, I mean, it's not something new.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you guys:
it's like
this.
Quantity versus quality. I mean,
is this any different? Well, how is this different from the ways that you guys are used to normally doing a project, writing a code? How is agile development any different than what you guys are used to?
Well, we usually wouldn't go through the task of estimating hours for every single product. Now, would say we need this by a certain date, and
you would do it. You
would
still
do it.
Agile, but your days may have been 10 hours.
Yeah.
Now, one pro that I did find in agile programming, and this is, you could probably do this without agile programming without any problem, but I would be very, I guess, tickled on sharing a program with anybody, like co-producing programs. And after we did the Scrum, I actually enjoyed it a lot more than I thought it was. I mean, it's almost you're keeping each other on your toes. It's almost kind of a I want to say competitive, but you're constantly trying to.
Well, it is. You look at it, you're like, okay, I did this. Somebody did something similar. I mean, right now, the MVC product that we're working on, I haven't had as much experience on it. So I look at Matt's code. I'm like, okay, good idea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or not even just good idea, just like, how do you do this? Uh-huh, that's how you do this.
Yeah.
Hope you're right.
And I think
there's a lot to learn.
And there's probably people listening right now that are programmers that have done Scrum would say, or that haven't done Scrum would say, well, you have a product that works.
Yeah.
So what's the problem? You know, this product is being used by people and it works fine. So what's the problem? Well, I would say the problem is maintainability in the future. When you have a active product life cycle, time's gonna get longer and longer till the point where you're like, We gotta rewrite it, we gotta scrap it, or we gotta like do some major refactoring, and then you're gonna end up like, you know, Netscape did. Spend 5-6 years trying to rewrite a program from scratch and it never comes out, and then you're gone, you know.
Yeah, but that's a golden rule. Never rewrite. You know?
<Yeah. laughs> And that takes us to our next topic, I guess, which is this notion of the duct tape programmer, which sparked made a lot of people write some blogs lately because
set the blogosphere on fire
the developer side. When Joel Spolsky from Fog Creek and Stack Overflow, who's fairly popular, I would say, in the development community,
yeah,
wrote a blog post about why he likes duct tape programmers.
All right, so give us a short synopsis of what his description of the duct tape programmer was.
His description is the person compared to, he compared it to, I think, a go-kart race. And you have right. two go-karts.
That's right.
And you have one team who, you know, they have the duct tape and the WD-40, and those are their tools. And they get something going, and it flies down there. And then you have the other team that's designing I forget how he said it.
Like they're doing titanium and trying to figure exactly. out, you know. I liken it to, like, an Army field surgeon and a guy, you know, in a hospital setting. You know, you've got a guy that out there that just has to get this guy to stop bleeding and dying,
yes.
fix the problem as fast as possible, ship him out and get him done. And then a guy who's in a hospital who schedules everything and who, you know, you know what approach good. You're going to
yeah,
take.
Yeah. Things I think like we that. Had you here for
yeah,
a reason.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Save the life or I'm also done. Save the life.
We'll no longer talk for the rest of the podcast.
Yeah. Comment notched.
But that's kind of how I – and I have actually done basically – I didn't realize that I was duct taped coding, but I had to do something, a project similar to that at the job I was at before I worked with all of you guys. It was just a thing in Access, but for me, it was just a Band-Aid problem that eventually a complete separate solution was going to be made. And right. it wasn't going to, and mine was just going to be totally trashed. And of course, that was about 2 years ago, and I think they're still using it now.
well, see, and like, I'm one of the people that agree with Joel on this.
I do too. I agree with it.
I'm not
to an extent.
Right.
To an extent. But I see pros and cons, yeah.
I agree with the point he's getting out. And, you know, one of the other things he mentioned in his article, which I wholeheartedly believe in, is this complexity of code that as we get more design patterns and as more of these academic thoughts of how we should structure our code come about, you do have certain people that can understand it just without any problem at all. But to make it supportable
have another beer, Chris.
All right. So, to make it supportable by everybody, it becomes a little bit a little difficult. Now, I'll have to admit, where we work now, we've got an amazing group of smart people that there's probably not any given piece of code or any design that we could write that we wouldn't be able to understand. Not everybody's going to recognize it right away because we're all at a different level. You know, somebody's working on a different area of, let's say, C-sharp or, you know, just the different part of the technology. But nobody is, everybody's intelligent enough to understand what we're doing. But you do get to a point where you refactor something to us refactor it so much that it just becomes difficult to just open up and fix a bug. It's just as difficult to fix a bug in this highly refactored, highly designed code as it is in spaghetti code. And you end up in the same place. So I think there's a good mix for both.
Yeah. I like on Jeffrey Palermo's blog. I'm thinking I pronounced that right.
If he's listening, then he sticks
right. Then we're doing something right.
Yeah. He sticks with the duct tape analogy. And he says, duct tape is strong. It's sticky. It's easy to apply. On the other hand, it's not durable. It deteriorates in water and sunlight. It is not removed or reapplied easily, and God help you if you get it stuck to yourself. So there are good uses for, he says, there are good uses for a duct tape approach, and there are times when it is professional negligence.
Right. I was going to say, it would depend on, I would think, what is the project? What type of project is it? Is it like I was doing, where it was just literally a Band-Aid fix, where they simply needed a way to track paperless documentation and to keep certain, they would have like five or six different departments working on the same project. Every department does a different thing. They had parts that had to be identified and inventory that had to be kept, things along those lines. And it was just basically they had run into a couple of issues where product wasn't shipped to clients because things were lost, paperwork was lost, things didn't get ordered. Why are we 2 weeks behind on this? Well, I never got that order requisition. It was basically a big PO system is basically what I did. And yeah, and it and they were like, you know, eventually they were just gonna stick it, you know, redo the whole thing in SQL, and instead of Access and do it in SQL and VB.
Oops. What was that?
Wasn't a beer bottle.
Now you can try and say supportability.
Supportability.
Word. Nice.
Supportability. But yeah, I think it definitely depends on the project, and hopefully you would have time to determine when you're given your scope of here's what we need and here's when we need it by. Okay, can I should I duct tape this together? And I guess most of that's going to be dictated by your timeline.
And Jeffrey goes on to say that if you're creating a throwaway solution, maybe it is appropriate to put something together like that.
Right.
But
right.
You throw away duct tape, you don't refactor it, you know. But and I think that's the problem is how important is future maintainability to getting a product out the door in 2 weeks.
Exactly.
Well, and he's talking about that particular. Let's not forget. Wow. That is some nice pale ale. But
this is the best podcast ever.
I don't remember.
What was I talking about?
When are we going to do podcast 5?
You guys have any duct tape?
Joel was talking about, you know, the duct tape programmer is the best type of programmer. And, I don't necessarily think he's solely saying that is the best solution. But he's like, if you had to have a guy on your team, do you want somebody who...
You want a hot shot that's going to come in and be able to do something.
That can get some stuff done.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. I
don't think you could have a whole team full of...
And like you, Chris, I agree with Joel on most of it. Because I'm guilty of this as any other non-duct tape programmer out there, you know, where I've found myself just trying to over-engineer something.
You have some of the prettiest code any person might ever see.
But I find I get into something and I it's a problem that I've tried to work on that, you know, I'm trying to, you know, fix it, you know, I'm trying to correct it so I don't do it anymore, but I try to over engineer something. And
well, what's that new pattern you're working on? Is it OCD?
Yeah, the OCD pattern.
Well, Michael, you were telling me just last week, you said you had to go in and you had to fix something and some project that you worked on a year ago, 6 months ago, last week, I don't know. But you were like, it is so hard. I have to make this one small change. And all of us, you know, we've evolved as programmers. And you go back and you look at your old code.
Yes.
And you're like, oh, wow, why would I have even done it this way? But, you didn't know better. Technology was different then than it is now. And so it's so very hard to just leave well enough alone and just make the change like you would have coded it back then. That as, you know, Michael the programmer 2 years ago or whatever.
And on that project, I mean, I could easily just changed like a class, the data source, and then changed every class that was referencing that, whatever.
Be done with
okay, going back to maintainability, I mean, potentially this product could change its data source again. So then do I rather just change the data source or do I create 50 classes and... Okay, not 50. Do I create all these classes and, you know, the repository services and models and everything, and then in the future all I got to do is change one thing and everything still works. So I believe like what Eric is saying, it's like you got to look at your scope and you got to look at the future of the project. I mean, is this going to change or is this just something quick and dirty we have to get out there? And
well, and again, it depends on the actual what type of programmer are you. I mean, are you somebody who really writes code or are you somebody who likes to, you know, write UML diagrams and really you like the whole process of designing a project. But when it gets down there and you actually realize that inside this method, you're like, oh, hell, you know, this is either three interfaces wrong or I'm just going to code it.
Yeah. Right. And you can definitely go overboard. And I think maybe that's where he's talking about, because I find myself with stuff outside, you know, personal stuff I've worked on where I'm like, I'm spending, you know, 3 days trying to design out, you know, a
right,
you know, a structure for this. And it's like, man, I just need to start coding it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is me. I mean, I don't
that's
know.
Something I've struggled that I've been struggling with, but.
Well, that's one of the things I like about the NAD framework. I'm not going to talk any more about it. But
I already fell asleep.
NAD.
But as far as my home stuff, it's really it makes it so much easier that I don't have to think about what step I'm going to go here or what steps I'm going to take. I'm like, I'm just going to use it. I'm going to use those entities. I'm going to be done. Because yeah. I don't have Michael and Matt looking over my shoulder at this code.
Yeah.
At home, I'm a great duct tape programmer.
Yeah.
At work, I try to be a little bit less duct tapey.
Yeah. And there's a fine line. I think you can design stuff correctly without being a duct tape duct tape programmer.
I think podcast number 6. We're just gonna read like. Word, you know,
we're gonna have to write Peter a script Piper. Out eventually.
That's
but
funny.
I really like duct tape programming. And
next week we will employ the auto tune. Be the auto speak. Correct my mumbled words.
I think one of the best things that I got out of that article was the Netscape.
That was interesting.
I forget who that guy's name was. But he even wrote a response to Joel's, you know, talking about – because I think his whole thing centered around Netscape and the fact that they needed to release a product.
Joel wrote, you know, his decisions like not using C++ and not using threads that made us ship the product on time. That's what that's what they said about – or Joel didn't say that. That's what they said about Netscape.
Yeah. And the Netscape guy even came back and said he defended it because, what was it, another group came in and started redesigning?
Well, Netscape, yeah, they're the company that, and this guy wrote, that routinely shipped a browser that kept crashing, wasn't able to compete with IE, got their source code into a bad enough shape that they had to rewrite it from scratch and lose 5 to 6 years doing so, and then they collapsed.
Didn't they go from 4 to 6? Wasn't that what the thing was? There was no version 5?
But if you read it close enough, like if you read it a little further, you find out that that code that they writ that they wrote.
Wow, they righted some code.
Michael, you may need to talk a little more water drinker. But he was talking about, you know, the code that they released there actually did get out there, was functioning. They had a Netscape brought in another group or acquired another group. I don't know the details, but this other group came in and they started rewriting pieces of that code. And that is what a lot of people attribute to the pieces that crashed, didn't work, and got the code in such a poor shape that they chose to rewrite it. Hmm. Which, again, I mean, I don't know that I've ever seen any code. All right, well, except for.
Whoa, hey, did we just say that?
Do not that? Say the T word.
We'll bleep that out.
But I don't know who that person is. But
we'll move on.
Even then, that was the only code I've ever had to completely rewrite. And the only reason I would have ever, the only reason I did do that.
Hey, you're looking at someone else who had to rewrite one of them.
Same here.
Well, my piece was it didn't, the code that was checked into SourceSafe didn't compile, and it wasn't the same code that was released.
Yeah.
So I
that's
did not
a duct tape programmer, though.
No, that is a Scotch
not really
tape
a programmer.
Programmer.
Not a programmer.
Scotch,
right.
Scotch tape programmer. Well, I think we just coined a new term.
Or a Google programmer.
We need to blog about that before someone else steals it.
But no, you don't ever have to rewrite something. You just buy SAP and fit it in.
And after this article or essay that Joel wrote, it, of course, everyone went to their blogs and started writing about their thoughts about it. And the Twitter world erupted. And someone, Jimmy Bogard, a pretty popular programmer, wrote, "Duct tape programmers, sacrificing tomorrow's productivity today."
See, I completely disagree with that. Because that guy's, he's been in the same spot. You know, I mean, that's somebody who's misinterpreting what Joel's trying to say. He's just talking about somebody who can get something done and isn't paralyzed by.
And it may be ugly under the hood and it doesn't matter. It depends on what the project is.
Are you a coder capable of getting a product that does work in a short amount of time?
Yeah.
Right. You know, I mean, if given a, you know, a decent amount of development time, I don't think a duct tape programmer is going to still try to get it done in 2 weeks and then, you know, go to Tahiti. He's going to...
Maybe not.
You know, you're just saying this is a guy who, under certain situations, can get something out there.
Right.
Yeah. Right.
You know, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I think we all qualify as being able to... We know the right way to do it, and we know that given, you know, 2 hours, if we have to have something out the door... Well, here's what we can do.
It's, the way to do it right and the way to do it fast.
Yeah. I mean, we're just capable. We're capable
of doing
it. Hopefully
we can combine both.
Exactly.
Hopefully, right.
That's the goal, right? I guess, right?
And I think that's what Joel was trying to say, and I think people are misinterpreting it.
Probably. Well, I think a lot of people when Joel responded to Joel was from a black and white point of view. I mean, they were just, they weren't looking at it from.
Yeah.
I agree. You know, we're not talking about the situation where you have 6 months to design a product that takes 6 months to, design, right, develop.
Of course, the best Twitter response was the never take software advice from a bug tracking system salesman.
Now that is pretty good.
Because, you know, Joel is their Fog Creek's main product is fog bugs.
Right.
So, well, but cool. I think that's obviously just a joke, you know, but because I've listened and I've read a lot of what Joel has written in the past, yes, and it's great stuff. So,
all right. So, in summary, agile, thumbs down. Duct tape programming, thumbs up.
Michael? Depending on the situation.
How many thumbs do I get?
You get 14 thumbs.
14 thumbs?
Oh, well, 14.
You had the right number of hands.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
On Scrum, I'm thinking one thumb up, one thumb down. I mean, I think it could hurt a project, but at the same time, if you use it wisely and correctly, and depending on the project and how large it is, I think it could really help.
I think if we actually had a product user, that would make a big difference.
Yeah, I think if you use Scrum correctly and on the right project, I think it can work. You know,
Scrum is definitely not to be used by duct tape programmers.
Mm.
You're almost forced to be a duct tape programmer.
So the opposite.
It depends on how well you are at estimating your hours.
Exactly.
Yes. When you got to fit it in both.
And it depends on the product and the company you work for.
Did you guys play after I left today?
And yeah, of course we did. What are you talking about? Everyone has no idea what we're talking about again.
It's fine.
It's okay. Maybe if you wrote us an email and asked what BOLF was, we'd tell you.
Yeah.
It lends mystery.
Yeah. podcast@craftycoders.com.
I'm starting out.
We're now berating our listeners for not sending us emails.
Maybe I hope that email's working. Maybe I should test it again.
They're all like, those bastards. I sent you three of them.
That's funny.
All right. So what do you think, Matt? Agile? Thumbs up, thumbs down?
Thumbs down.
All right. Duct tape programmer? You're not a duct tape programmer.
I'm not a duct tape programmer.
He's not a duct tape promer, like you said.
Wow.
I've written...
We're going to go there.
You know what, though? I've written plenty of code that is, you know, getting something out the door, but... I wouldn't say it's the best code I've ever written, but obviously that's not the point.
JB?
Of what?
I'm just playing.
JB?
You know, the best programmer I've ever written. Nobody knows. You can't say JV, it out loud.
Yeah.
JV.
Yeah.
Best programmer. Or best program written by the best programmer ever created.
Yeah.
Man.
Michael's still lost.
I am too, actually. I'm totally lost.
No one else is going to get it, so we'll just move on. Michael will get it in like 10 minutes.
That's right.
No!
No, I'm still lost.
I get it, guys. Not mine, it's crafty.
Wow, you actually sound like
you're impersonation.
Yourself. Yeah.
That's crazy.
That's the best Michael we've had on the show.
Puberty voice crafts.
All right.
So lastly, I think we're going to talk about...
how many domains do you own?
In our off-topic discussion.
I only own two that I can remember.
I think I own 9.
I let code beautification go, mainly because who could spell that? But it was an afterthought.
Well, now someone's going to pick it up and be like...
Dude, pick it up and do something with it.
Yeah.
It was a good name.
Yeah.
I think I own 5, of which... Chris and Brandy is the only one you can get to. I mean, literally, that doesn't probably say GoDaddy is parked on this page. But I buy them still.
Yeah.
And none of them are good. They're just...
What's the worst one you got?
Clayotic.
Clayotic?
That is my worst.
What does that mean?
How do you spell that?
Before I was a programmer, I was a visual arts major,
and
mainly in like pottery, ceramics, that type of thing. So chaotic,
Actually pretty cool.
Something up there, maybe, but I mean, come on.
Well, that's why all of us have multiple domains that have nothing.
That when we think of it, we go, that's a great domain.
Isn't that what programmers do in their spare time? They buy domains?
You're just thinking names. You're like, is this available? It is. I can't believe nobody else is as smart as I am.
I think the most ridiculous one I have is probably sewerenergy.com.
Everybody needs to do their duty.
Do their duty.
We're going to sell shirts on it one day that say, do your duty.
Sewerenergy.com.
I really do own that one, though. Sewerenergy.com.
I think that was genius.
One at one point in time. I was going to write a free dating website.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
What was it called?
RealFreeSingles.com. I still own it.
And I re-upped it
because I was like, RealFreeSingles.com. That's a good name.
Instead of fake free singles.
Right. Well, exactly. Well, there you get a lot of those. And having done the singles dating thing before I met my awesome girlfriend now.
How much do singles usually cost?
Well, you're only getting one, so they're cheaper. It's a single.
Well, singles is plural.
Well, but you get, you know, to do a lot of dating sites, you're looking at $20.
Stop crushing his dreams, Michael.
Yeah. Don't you shut up.
RealFreeSingles.com.
You're not invited
free
anymore.
Real singles.
Yeah. Bradley didn't make fun of me. And then a guy that I used to work with, we had softwarethatsucks.com.
That's pretty good, right there.
We were going to have it. I think it may be available. Jump on it.
I hear those. Yeah.
Michael's going to go buy it.
I hear those crawlers. They like just wait for something to go, like become unrenewed.
Right.
And they just pick it up. They're like, somebody thought this was good at one time.
Right.
I'm going to pick it up.
Well, and I remember when, I can't remember who it was that was selling names, but they would jump on a name if you just searched for it to see if it was available.
Right, yeah, a lot of people.
And they would, and then it would, like for like 3 days, they would tie it up.
Squatter.
Yeah. Well, it was the same place that you would buy it from. So if you went back and looked for it again, it would suddenly show as not being available. It's like, that doesn't make any sense.
You know what's wrong? Disappointing as can be is thinking of a good name, finding it taken, and then going to the website and like, that sucks.
Yeah, the guy who has my name, ericmore.com, your website sucks. You need to go ahead and do something with it or call me up and give me the name.
I have mkchandler.com, which is my first and middle initial and then my last name.
The most unique username of all time, but
.com.
I wonder if that one's available.
But long story short, but I have Vegas Hat is my username for everything. Yeah. And so just the word Vegas Hat put together.
That's your hacker name?
It's just my everything name.
It's my handle, guys.
Zero cool.
Everything I've ever done, it's been available. You know, I mean, I go to Gmail. I was so late to Gmail. It's not even funny. I mean, I picked it up easy as can be. Somebody has VegasHat.com, and it's the worst site. I mean, not the worst. I think MattSucks.com was pretty bad. But
wow.
You own that, don't you?
No, I said it was pretty bad. But it just upsets me.
Whoa.
Don't go to Vegas
Hat. Yeah, don't go to MattSucks.com.
You didn't know VegasHat.com?
Yeah. Isn't that ridiculous?
It's like a
photographer or something.
Yeah.
I thought you went to MattSucks.com. I was like, hey, careful.
And I've tried to figure out. I was like, is Vegas Hat really some word in some other language? No. I know.
Whoa.
That was a lot different than the last time I saw it.
That site's not so bad.
Like I said, VegasHat.com.
Wow, this is your website, Chris?
That's right, babies.
Is that all your girlfriend?
Oh, hell. Am I going to get kicked out of Crafty Coders?
Yeah. No. I think, let's see, what's the, we own a, me and Chris, or do you own it? I think you own spinmyring.com.
Spinmyring.com. That was going to be genius.
That was going to be just videos of people spinning their rings that you could submit.
Whoever knew that?
That would be global.
It's like that South Park episode where that phenomenon. Kid made the TV show and all it was up close episode or up close shots of animals with a wide angle lens. It's the same thing.
Oh, South Park's funny. All right, what's your worst site, Michael?
I only have one site, so I'm not that crafty when it comes to that.
Michael, you don't have the disease?
Nope, I only have michaelandcara.com. I'm cheap. I know like what domains cost $5 a year.
Yeah, well, cheap on time. You can go to name.com and they may even be cheaper.
It's more like cheap on time. It's like I hardly even keep this site up and running and updated.
I don't keep any of mine updated. What are you talking about?
But I'm telling you right now, when somebody wants clayaddict.com, $25 in my pocket.
What about joe.com?
Joe.com.
Yeah. Quiz, how do you spell Joe?
Joax.
Joax.
I'm trying to think of other ones. Topalbumsofthedecade.com.
Yeah.
You have that one?
I have that one. Wow. That's gonna be big.
Wow.
It's
as soon as I get some albums out
it's,
there.
It's like anything. You need to like get the also four-letter abbreviation of it or something.
Oh, I didn't think about that.
Well, we got to do that before it gets...
A-O...
I'm trying to think if that was like an acronym or something. That'd have been cool.
Toad. Top out. Toad.
Toad, yeah, I was going to say, where's...
Toad would have been cool, but no.
Yeah, might as well do toad.com.
There's that A before... Oh, yeah, I'm sure that's taken.
No, yeah. Top albums of...
Teod.
Well, you don't say T.
Oh, yeah, Teotod.
Teotod.
What?
Teotod.
Oh, maybe Teotod. You do. Maybe you do, Teotod. And they're like, how do you spell that? And you're like, if you don't know, you're not cool enough.
I think people have stopped listening now.
I know Michael has.
What?
He was just updating michaelandcara.com.
Hello, my name is Michael Green. This
no,
is podcast
not.
Number
Your
5.
My name is Michael Green.
Michael Green. I'm crafty. I'm crafty guy.
I got one domain.
Yeah.
I'm so cool. Chaotic sucks.
Michael.
Wow. Such language.
All right.
Well, guys, we probably ought to wrap it up. Do we have any idea what we're doing next week?
No. Oh, hey, for any students out there that are listening, go get Windows 7 $29.99 at some stupid named website. Just search for a Windows 7 student discount. But
The first thing it's going to show you is the home premium, but once you get the email from Microsoft, there is a way to get professional.
Professional, yeah. So you can't be an idiot. It's like a link in the middle of the page as big as anything.
I'm really liking your website, Chris.
Damn.
Wow.
You'd think I'd be getting more money for that. I wonder if I can get trouble at home.
Yeah, money was what I was thinking, getting more money.
Trouble home. It's easy to get in trouble at home.
No, I'm going to go home, and I'm like, hey, baby, have you seen Vegas?
She doesn't listen to your podcast.
No, but when she goes, can you believe you were viewing VegasHat.com? And I'm like, can you believe I wasn't? Come on. Yeah. That is my name.
That guy's need to thank us for driving traffic to his site.
That's horrible. It probably is. There's probably people searching for me, and they're like, wow, Chris grew up to be a pornographer.
It's not pornography.
Oh, no?
It's erotic photography.
Yeah.
As opposed to
bikini models. Bikini models is what it looks like.
All right.
Anyway, so do you have any idea what we're doing next week?
T-Pain auto-tuned.
We're going to do the whole podcast in auto-tune.
Auto-tune.
Excellent. Oh, yeah. I don't even know how to auto-tune.
Well, guys, let's
what do you guys think about repository stuff? Maybe?
I think we kind of already discussed that, didn't we?
We didn't do a good job. We'll figure something out.
No, we talked about it today, right? Not over-engineering.
Duct tape.
For those of you who want that Windows 7 address, it's windows7.digitalriver.com.
Yeah. We'll put it in the show notes, too. Direct link.
Excellent.
Well, Michael, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, guys.
What do you mean? I've came to every podcast.
That's true. Right about. That's in spirit, at least.
You weren't at the first couple, I don't think. You didn't want to be at those, though.
And for Matt and Chris, I'm Eric, and thanks for listening to the Crafty Coders.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.